If you're a fan of the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know their first round playoff game tips off at 5:30. You're not going to make the opening tip, I'm sorry. But I do promise you that you'll make it home in time for the fourth quarter. And everybody knows that in an NBA game, that's really the only quarter that matters. So you will make it home in time to see crunch time. If you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, you've also probably been stressed out over the past few weeks just keeping up with the standings. This year in the Western Conference, there's just been one or two games separating several teams. In fact, one game could be the difference between being in fourth place where the Thunder landed and not even making the playoffs, as the Denver Nuggets learned. And you see these tight standings through the end of the regular season, and you see clearly that standing matters. Where you stand is important. And for us, as we examine God and our relationship with God, that's also true. Where we stand with God, it matters. And we should always be concerned about our standing with our Father. And we don't have to guess. We don't have to wonder. We don't have to be stressed out, perhaps the way we are following an NBA team or a football team. We can always know where we stand with God. As Paul is addressing the church at Rome, one of the things he is trying to help them learn, he wants them to see their standing with God. And what he's doing, he's showing two different paths for them to walk. He shows them where they stand with God without Jesus. He shows them where they stand with God based on their own efforts trying to follow the law. And then he contrasts that with where they stand with God through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Romans 3, 10 and 11 sums up what Paul has written thus far to the church at Rome. None is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside, together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. That's where we are without Jesus. When you look at Romans 3, 10 and 11, it displays our standing before God without Jesus Christ. On our own, just trying to follow the old law, trying to live up to it to perfection, we're not going to make it. And these words in Romans 3, 10 and 11, they're so clear. No one is righteous. Not even one. No one understands. No one seeks for God. Everyone has turned aside. The apostle has rightly concluded that all people have come under the condemnation of sin. There was no one, absolutely no one, who could justify themselves through a perfect keeping of the law. The first part of Romans speaks of this. It shows the Gentiles where they are, their standing before God. It speaks of the Jewish people, where they stand before God. But beginning here in Romans 3, verse 21, there is a shift in the conversation. Paul just wasn't seeking to condemn these people. He wasn't seeking to just show them that they were sinners in need of a Savior. He wanted to show the solution. The former section told of the need or the problem. What we're going to enter tonight speaks of the remedy or the solution to sin. Let's look first at Romans 3, 21. But now apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets. God's righteousness has been made known. It's been manifested. And Paul describes this righteousness in detail throughout this letter. Just from looking at this one verse, what do we learn about this righteousness? Well, we know that it's been revealed. It's been manifested. It's been made known. Notice how it has been revealed. This righteousness has been revealed apart from the law, separate from the law. This is no longer about the old covenant. This is not about the old relationship that Israel had with God. This was huge for the Jews to know. We also see that it is a righteousness of God. It's a righteousness witnessed by the law and the prophets, a righteousness apart from the law, a righteousness by faith, a righteousness that's available to all people. The word manifested is in the perfect tense. It was manifested, and it still remains manifested. It's open to view for all people to see. This implies the once-for-all nature of this righteousness. There will never be a time in the history of earth, there will never be a time moving forward when righteousness before God will be based on anything other than faith in Jesus Christ. We look at this righteousness and we know that it's heavenly in its origin. The phrase of God distinguishes this righteousness from our feeble attempts at being righteous. If you think back to the Old Testament, you think back to the prophet Isaiah. Do you remember Isaiah's words to the nation of Judah concerning their attempts at righteousness? His words not only describe the attempts of the people in Judah to be righteous, they also describe our feeble attempts. In Isaiah 64, verse 6, the prophet writes, "But we are all as unclean rags, and all our righteousness are as filthy rags." That describes our own righteousness. We can't do it on our own. Our righteousness just doesn't measure up. So what we see here from Paul is a righteousness that was planned and executed by God. Now that word is important because that word righteousness, it talks about our standing before God. We want God to be able to look at us and see us as righteous. We want God to be able to look at us and see us as having made the cut, if you will. And such a right standing isn't accomplished by humanity. It's not something we can earn on our own. It's something that God provided us, something that God made possible for humanity through His Son 2,000 years ago. And it is laid hold of by faith. But it is grounded in a once-for-all life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so that is where we find it. To find this righteousness of what Paul speaks, we have to go back to the work that God accomplished, independent of our own performance. And then we see this phrase. This righteousness was witnessed by the law and the prophets. This would be significant for the Jews. Keep in mind, Paul is trying to reach this group of people that thinks they're okay on their own, that thinks they can measure up, make the cut on their own. Their standing with God, it's not good because they're trying to do it without Jesus. But this righteousness of which Paul speaks is not some new concept. It's not some new idea. We learn that this righteousness was actually set forth back in the Old Testament. And this should make sense to us. After all, we know that God is eternal, and anything from God will be eternal. So this teaching of being justified apart from the works of the law, it isn't new. It's something that's actually found within the pages of the Old Testament. The law, the prophets, introduced this teaching. This can be seen in verses such as Habakkuk 2 verse 4, Psalm 32 verse 1, Genesis 15 verse 6, and elsewhere. So what Paul is writing here to the church at Rome, it's not novel, it's not new. It was actually spoken of back in the Old Testament. If you remember Paul's letter to Timothy, Paul will speak of the scriptures as making Timothy wise unto salvation through faith. That's found in 2 Timothy 3. The scriptures of which Paul is talking about are the Old Testament scriptures. So even within the pages of the Old Testament, we learn the importance of faith in our walk with God. It is a mistake to think that justification by faith is taught in just a few isolated Old Testament passages. The truth is that it is woven throughout the pages of the Old Testament. So it's significant for us, and even more significant for the Jews at this time, to realize that this isn't a new, novel teaching from Paul. Let's move on to verse 22. Here Paul writes, "Even the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all those who believe, for there is no distinction." Paul makes it clear what righteousness what type of righteousness God is talking about. It's not God's own personal righteousness that's in view. It is a righteousness which exists through faith. God's own personal holiness of character exists independent of faith. You think about it this way. Whether or not I believe in God doesn't change God's righteousness. God will always be righteous whether everybody believes in Him or whether nobody believes in Him. Our faith or lack of faith will never change who God is. When you look at the character of God, if you were to examine His character and just list out different characteristics, we know that God is righteous. He will always be righteous. He always has been righteous. And I will never change that. So that's not what Paul is writing about here. He's not writing about the righteousness of God. Because God's righteousness is independent of our faith or our lack of faith. Our own righteousness apart from faith is not what Paul is addressing. Paul is not showing us that we can be righteous based on our own efforts, based on our own works, because that will never line up. Our righteousness minus faith is not and never will be adequate. So that's also not what Paul is addressing here. So what exactly is Paul talking about? When you look at this word righteousness as Paul uses it here in these two verses, he's talking about what's possible for us. It's not possible to be righteous on our own. It's also not possible for God to somehow lose His righteousness based on our unbelief. So what Paul has in mind is a right standing with God, which comes through faith. That's the only path for us. The only way for God to look at us and see us as righteous is through faith in His Son. That's the only pathway. If we're trying to achieve righteousness some other way, if we have some other thought in our mind, I'm going to reach this some other way, it's not going to happen. And that's what the Jews were trying to do. They were trying to do something impossible. They were trying to attain righteousness. They were attempting to attain good standing with God through their own efforts. It wasn't achievable. This righteousness is also not obtained through faith in faith. Now listen to that. It's not the fact that we have faith, and so we put our faith in our own faith. That's something humanity would only try to do. It is not obtained through our faith or our trust in obedience. We don't put our trust in our faith. We don't put our trust in our obedience. It is only found through faith in Jesus Christ. If you were to examine faith on its own, faith just in and of itself has no inherent power to justify. What makes faith valuable? What is it about faith that can actually lead us to this destination where God sees us as righteous? Well, just a couple of thoughts. And as I mentioned these, just think about your own faith. Is your faith valuable? Valuable faith can be found in what it moves us to do. If we really believe in God, if we really believe in His Son, and we have complete trust, complete faith in Him, it's going to move us. It's going to motivate us. It's going to change our behavior. Maybe if we look at our life and there seems to be something missing, something lacking, some things that we're not accomplishing from God, it could be a faith problem. Our faith isn't big enough. The apostles, even when they walked with Jesus, there were times when their faith just wasn't big enough. It wasn't big enough to accomplish what God needed them to do. Faith is also valuable based on who that faith is in. I can put my faith in so many false gods. I can put my faith in other religions. But if our faith is not in Jesus Christ, What value is it? So faith in and of itself won't lead us to righteousness. It has to be a certain kind of faith. It has to be a faith that's centered in Jesus Christ. It has to be a faith that actually moves us to do something. And when I think about that last thought, sometimes it's scary. Because as Christians, are we moving? Are we moving God's direction? Are we moving and fulfilling His mission for our lives? Are we moving and doing what He needs us to do? Because true biblical faith, it's always accompanied by action. Abraham believed, so he went to that distant country. Abraham believed, so he was willing to offer up his son Isaac. And you see that same formula throughout the pages of the Bible. True biblical faith that leads to righteousness, it's going to move you. It's going to move you God's direction. It's going to move you to take action on His behalf. Just as faith in and of itself has no intrinsic merit, we can say the same thing about obedience. Obedience also has no intrinsic merit. Obedience is simply the hand reaching out and laying hold of an available gift. If we put faith in our own obedience, if we kind of step back and look at ourselves and say, look at how obedient I am. Look at how great I'm following after God. Isn't that what the Jews were doing? Isn't that what they were trying to accomplish here in the first century? Now that's worth repeating. It's not through faith in obedience that justification comes. It is only through faith in Jesus that enables our justification. And that's where the problem was, and that's what Paul is trying to address. The Jews, they were seeking to establish their own righteousness by trusting in their obedience. One today who does this, one today who would credit their obedience with saving power, is missing the point entirely. And as we step back and take a look at God's plan of salvation, we know that obedience is a must. We know that we have to obey the commands that Jesus has given us. But are we sometimes guilty of elevating obedience above the person who saves? We know we have to obey, but it all comes through Jesus Christ. Maybe we sometimes get lost when contemplating faith and grace. We know that grace is a gift that God has given us. Grace can be summed up by God's love, His kindness, His mercy. That's what makes up grace. It's from God. We understand that faith is our response to God. To say a thing is by faith is also to say it is by grace. These two words are not in opposition to each other. All of this, faith, grace, it's all wrapped up, it's all tied up in the person and the sacrifice of Jesus. What Jesus did for us at the cross, if you want one word to sum it up, many words could come to your mind, but grace would be adequate. What Jesus did at the cross was an act of grace. It was an act of mercy, an act of love, an act of kindness. All of that summed up by that big word, grace. And if it wasn't for that gift, we wouldn't have anything to believe in. Our faith is in the person, Jesus Christ. And we trust Him, we believe in Him, because of what He did for us at Calvary. So grace and faith, they are tied together. They cannot be separated from the person and the work and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. The grace that we've been given flows through our Savior. And our response to that is one of trust, one of faith. I'm going to follow this man. I'm going to live for him. Because there is no salvation without Jesus. There is no justification without Jesus. There is no way for us to be righteous, as we see here in Romans 3, without Jesus. If you take Jesus out of the equation, who do we have to believe in? If you take Jesus out of the equation, what will obedience get us? Absolutely nothing. Because justification in Christ is for those who believe, and only for those who believe, we know you have to have belief, and justification is available for all who believe, but because it's tied to belief, perhaps we're tempted to attribute to faith saving power. Because a Christian must continue in the Lord, maybe we attribute obedience to saving power. There is no salvation without Jesus. Saving power is from God, it is of God, accomplished through the death and resurrection of His Son. We also have two other words that we need to look at. We've looked at grace and faith, how they're connected in the work and the life and the sacrifice of Jesus. Paul also uses the words law and faith. Now, those two words stand in opposition to each other as we read this letter from Paul. Because what the Jews were trying to do, they were trying to attain righteousness through the law. We can't grab hold of Jesus through works of the law. But we look at what Jesus has done. We know that it's possible for us to get here. It's possible for us to become righteous. God's love for us is unconditional. But the appropriation of that love in Christ is conditioned by faith. The righteousness issue isn't one of physical birth. It's not one of possessing the law or physical circumcision or moral insight. When it enters into the realm of faith, the door is open for all to be justified. Now let's wrap up this tonight by looking at Romans 3:23, a verse you've heard very often. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now, if you just look at these words by themselves, it kind of paints a bleak picture for humanity. Don't forget what we just looked at. Don't forget Romans 3:21 and 22. Because in the verses leading up to this verse, we see that it's possible for us to become righteous through Jesus Christ. And as you look at Romans 3, verse 23, it's in the middle of this great conversation that Paul is having with this church, showing them where they are. You're all sinners. You've all fallen short. But that's not the end of the story. In the verses leading up to this statement from Paul, he's shown us that we can be righteous through Jesus Christ. And then we reach this point and we see that the word sinned, it's timeless. The tense of this verb, it gathers up the whole race into one category. The human race has sinned and continues to sin. This includes Jew and Gentile. We've not only fallen short of God's glory, we keep falling short of His glory. So this verse, it sums up the human condition. It describes the human problem. It lays out our desperate need for help. Paul's words here had to grab the attention of the Jews. Think about the scribe who day by day is just copying the old law. This verse includes the scribe. The scribe has sinned. The scribe has fallen short of the glory of God. This verse also describes the Pharisee. The Pharisee who lived by the strictest interpretation of the law possible. He was still a sinner. The Pharisee has sinned. The Pharisee has fallen short of the glory of God. This verse describes the Jew who descended through Abraham, whose ancestors were led across the Red Sea by Moses. All of those Jewish people, these words describe them. They're all sinners. They've all fallen short of God's glory. Now notice that this verse doesn't end with a period. This verse actually ends with a comma. Just as there were words leading up to this showing that we could be righteous, there are verses after this as Paul continues to wrap up this conversation. Too often we pull this verse out of context. We need to know what precedes it. We also need to know what follows it. Tonight we've learned what preceded it. We can be righteous not through observing the law, not through trying to obtain it on our own, but we can be righteous through faith in Jesus Christ. But it's not just any faith that we're talking about. It's a faith that moves us to act. It's a faith that's centered in the person Jesus Christ. And isn't that great news? That in spite of Romans 3:23, in spite of this describing every single one of us in here tonight, we can still be righteous. We can still be justified in spite of our sin, in spite of the fact that we've all fallen short. And as we continue to move forward here in Romans, we're going to see this conversation continue. We're going to see that also we can become justified through Jesus Christ. And as we pick up next week, we're going to be introduced to Jesus as our substitute, our propitiation, the one who took our place at Calvary. And as you move through Romans, one thing that you notice over and over again, it always comes back to Jesus. It always is centered back on what he accomplished for us at the cross. When we started tonight, I mentioned the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm a Thunder fan. I like the Thunder. Sometimes I think we're more concerned about the standing of our sports team than we are about our standing before God. Oklahoma City Thunder, it's just a basketball team. Where you stand with God, that's eternity. And if you're not right with God, don't wait. If your standing with God isn't where it needs to be, and you don't have to guess, you don't have to wonder, we can know where we're at with God at all times. And if you're not where you need to be, you can get there through Jesus Christ. If you have a need, we invite you to come now as we stand and sing together.